Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Cereal from the Box.
I'm Marie.
And I'm Gianna. And this is the show where you learn exciting and depressing facts at the same time. Woohoo!
It doesn't necessarily sound that appealing, but
you know
we're
what?
Just keeping it real, I guess.
Reality sucks.
Yeah. What's your piece of reality that you want to share, Gianna?
Okay. So the good thing that happened is I am moving to my own apartment. Yippee ki yo yo.
Not with your grandfather.
Not with my grandpa.
Oh my goodness.
My boyfriend and I are moving in together. It's around the corner from my grandpa's house. I can walk there in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But it was just like, it was a really convenient neighborhood to be living in.
Yeah.
Because of Noam school and my school that I'm going to only be going to until October, but like, it's 5-minute walk from the train. It's all utilities included. Not too expensive.
That is so nice.
Like, I'll be paying way less than I'm paying now. Because the rent
amazing.
Where I would be living if I didn't move would be going up by like $200.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen. So no for me.
Yeah. I am so excited for you. This is very happy.
Come
news.
Visit. It'll be fun.
Yes.
And yeah, so that's that. And the thing that I was reminded of today that sucks is that the theater industry is not as unracist and unfatphobic as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So I had an audition today. It was like one of the first in-person auditions back that we've been having in New York. And it was really fun. Had a really good time. But, you know, reflecting back on the experience kind of led me to some conclusions. So the first thing was that at this audition, there was no Black people at all. Nobody
auditioning. Do you mind if I ask what it was for?
It was for a holiday production taking place at a theater in the South.
That feels almost even worse to me then.
You know, so there was no Black people auditioning. There was no Black people behind the table.
Yeah.
Everybody behind the table was white and male. They may have been in the LGBTQ plus community. I'm not sure. Like, you don't know that by looking at somebody.
That reminds me of that one line from Climbing Uphill in the last 5 years where it goes, there's a table of men, always men, usually gay.
I don't know.
That's the line.
You can't really tell if people are gay, or at least I can't.
No, it's just, it's funny how strikingly true that line continues to be.
And they were very nice, but there was me, and if you know what I look like, I look pretty, I think I don't look exactly white, but I don't.
White passing, if you will.
Yeah, I like white passing, but I don't look like the classic American girl. And there was one other Latina girl who was like darker skinned than I was, and she was fantastic. So like the point of the story is like I got cut from the audition, which is fine because you know everyone gets cut sometimes, everyone makes it to a callback sometimes, it's just the way life is. But it was just funny to me, like looking at the people that did get called back. And so we both got cut, and she was so good. She was a gorgeous dancer, and I was so shocked. It really was. And there's this other girl who was, like, maybe I wouldn't even say she was plus-sized at all. She was just not a typical dancer body.
Yeah.
And she was amazing. She was gorgeous. Like, I couldn't keep my eyes off of her. Like, she's a beautiful dancer. And she also got cut. And I was like, damn, racism, the fat phobia all coming.
Right.
In one audition, and the gender politics of theater, you know, it was just reminded me why we need to keep fighting for change, not
most
just
definitely
racism, sexism, but also fatphobia in theater, and like it is still a huge thing. And I think the dance world is one of the last spaces that is still not infiltrated, by like the forces of good. So it just like reminded me of like the work that we need to keep doing.
Yeah.
I'm glad we have our show.
Yes, that's true. And I'm glad that there's like people within the industry who are trying to fight against those things. It's just like hard when you have such an archaic system. And I was just thinking as you were speaking, I think audition rooms are a perfect place for those biases and prejudices to come out, because you need a reason to cut somebody but keep another, you know? And it's like one of those things that it's easy to just make a snapshot decision of like, I think, you know, because this person's body type, I'll just cut them regardless of like how good they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, you know, maybe the people in the room weren't racist or, you know, fatphobic, but maybe they were casting based on their audience and the way they want their performance to be perceived by the audience. And like, I don't pretend to know what it's like to live in the South of the United States. Like, I have no idea.
I don't want to. Imagine.
Just like, I'm thinking maybe they were thinking of, are their patrons gonna,
I mean, even so though, it's like buying into a racist system.
Exactly. You know? You're not fighting against anything. You're just, you know,
being complicit,
which is just as bad. And right. Again, like, I'm not telling the story like I got cut and just because of race. I'm like, no, I probably right. like I didn't I'm not saying that was my best audition I've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did well. You know, I felt good in the choreography. And did I want 5 more minutes to learn it? Absolutely. Yes, I did. But, you know, it's just like with the other people that I saw get cut that are part of these marginalized communities. Mm-hmm. I was like, damn. Like,
yeah,
the work is never over.
Nope, certainly not. And it's actually interesting that you lead with this story, because I do think it kind of segues into our topic for today's episode.
I thought so too.
So this episode is going to be kind of about what we wish other people who don't have eating disorders knew about eating disorders. And the reason I was even thinking about this in the first place is because I have a friend, shout out Sophie, who is currently in her social work program, her MSW program. Mm-hmm. And she was telling me that she was in class and the professor was teaching about eating disorders in particular.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what class it was that they were talking about it, but they were kind of talking about like referring someone to treatment for eating disorders, right? And they were saying that this professor was saying like, you know, you need to be careful when you're referring someone with an eating disorder to like a nutritionist, right? Because obviously we have great nutritionists or dietitians or however you want to refer to them, who work specifically with the eating disorder population. And that's great, wonderful, fantastic. But then you also have your regular old nutritionists and dietitians who are selling weight loss and buying into, you know, the diet culture kind of system. And that can be obviously really, really damaging. And so, you know, she was like just kind of educating her class about, you know, these bad experiences that I guess like her clients have had or things like that with nutritionists. Well, like,
I'm positively surprised that this professor had that insight, because everyone I've heard who's learned about eating disorders through their school has been like, yeah, nobody knew what they're talking about.
Okay, so this is interesting, because the professor was the good one in this story. The bad one was everyone that Sophie was in class with, who were all like, yeah, people with eating disorders, they just don't know how to eat. So if they go to a nutritionist and learn how to eat, then they'll be all better. It's like, what? I don't know. What?
That's dumb.
I was just so profoundly confused by these things that like Sophie was telling me that her classmates were saying, because it was like, one, you do understand like eating disorders are a mental illness.
Yeah.
Point blank, period.
Obviously not.
So I don't know how you feel like that could just be simply resolved through a more health-based, medical-based intervention. And don't get me wrong, because I when Sophie was telling us about this, I initially was like confused. I didn't have like the full context. So I thought the professor was saying you should never refer an eating disorder, someone with an eating disorder, to a nutritionist. I was like, actually, a nutritionist is a very core part of the treatment team. But that's not what she was saying at all. She was just saying, like, you need to be knowledgeable about who you're referring people to,
yeah,
because you don't want it to be more damaging than helpful. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just, like, so perplexed why anyone going into the mental health field, potentially as to become a therapist, right,
yeah,
as a lot of social workers do, thinking that eating disorders are simply, like, not knowing how to eat. Like, you don't, you, the nutrition information you learned is, like, wrong, if you will. And
like, that's that's a different thing. That's called misinformation. That's, like,
right. But I just, like, I want to break it down a little bit. It's like on one hand, right, people with eating disorders are maybe, like, too aware of nutritional information in general,
yeah,
right?
For some people.
Like, you have people that become obsessed with, like, macros and macro breakdowns. Mm-hmm. People that become obsessed with counting calories. You have me, who fell into the weird vegan atmosphere where they were trying to say that carbs were good, everything else bad, fats are horrible, eat 30 bananas in one sitting kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but...
Freely the banana lady.
Yeah, hate her, mm-hmm, but... you know, it's like, maybe, and like people who go on different diets, right? Keto, paleo, whatever it is,
mm-hmm,
get swindled into, like, the diet culture of it all. And it's not that you're unaware or misinformed necessarily about nutrition, because I think that's, like, the dietetics field in general. Like, there's not an overall consensus necessarily, maybe on, like, a basic level, sure, we understand, yeah, that our body processes carbs, or your brain needs carbs, your brain needs vitamins and minerals and whatever, like, that's what your body needs. I think we know, mm-hmm, that on, like, a basic level, but when it comes especially to nutritionists and dietitians that are prescribing weight loss, all of that is jumbled, and one person's going to tell you one thing, another person's going to tell you another thing. That's, like, literally, yeah, how diet culture works. You know, there is no one, mm-hmm, right way to eat. So to assume that, like, people with eating disorders just don't know the correct way to eat, it's also, okay, another part of this that makes me kind
That's
of mad.
Kind of like implying stupidity on the part,
yes,
of people.
Yes, and it's implying also that, like, okay, coming at it from, like, a restrictive eating disorder lens, right? Because I think a lot of this, mm-hmm, context, conversation was centered around anorexia, right? So it's kind of like implying, well, only if people with anorexia knew how to eat properly so they wouldn't get fat, then they wouldn't have an eating disorder. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like an inherently, like, very loaded fat phobic comment of, like, well,
exactly,
if everyone just knew how to eat right, then they wouldn't have to worry about not being skinny.
Good people,
you know, children. Like, I don't know. So it's, like, a very gross thing to say.
That's, like, so, like, another kind of, like, misconception thing, like, now that we're getting into it, is, like,
yeah,
so when I was researching for the episode, I, like, because I, something made me think of it. It was, like, a gym bro eating disorder.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I got onto this Reddit thread somehow, and these guys are, like, what's wrong with eating healthy? What's wrong with... And it's,
right,
like,
mm-hmm,
that's not healthy, what you're doing. Like,
yes,
obsessively counting, like, as you're saying, counting the macros, counting the calories, mm-hmm, cutting, bulking and cutting, your body swinging from having lots of food to having,
right,
almost no food. Like,
right,
wearing, sweating out your weight. Why is that normal? It's
Make
not normal,
it
okay?
Sense.
It's not healthy.
Right.
And so I feel like recognizing that fitness behaviors and, like, the culture surrounding men's fitness, it could also classify as an eating disorder if you, mm-hmm, just take away the masculinity from it, you know, the toxic masculinity.
Right, exactly. That, I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I feel like I've also seen, like, a variety of, like, TikTok videos about it too, where there's certain, like, creators that will do that. Like, these guys that talk about, like, their fitness routine and how they eat and yada yada yada, and everyone's,
and
like,
that also, like, promotes,
so disordered,
like, white western, what, westernism, I don't know how you'd say it, but, like,
yeah,
implying that, like, seasoning and stuff is unhealthy, and, like, implying that you can only eat, like, these foods, like, which excludes a lot of cultural foods,
right?
So it's like, that just promotes a lot of negative stuff. I don't know. It's just like, that's something I wish people would more recognize as an eating disorder behavior than people maybe do.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think, so when I was thinking about making this episode, I was really hoping that we could try to dive a little bit deeper than some of the fundamental things. But when Sophie like shared her story with me and that like whole incident, it made me think, oh, those things that I know to be common knowledge at this point by being like within the recovery community, like the fact that men have eating disorders, people of all genders have eating disorders, people of color have eating disorders, fat people have eating disorders, you know what I mean? Disabled people have eating disorders. Yeah. These are things that I feel like every single infographic that I've seen about like what is an eating disorder, right? These are like the top myth busters, right? Is like they don't discriminate in any kind of way. Anyone can end up with an eating disorder regardless of whatever identity or background you come from. And I've always found those things to like be kind of like, well, no duh, you know, but it's like when these things kind of happen, I realize like how much the general public like just doesn't get it. And I don't, like, I do understand why, because like media portrays eating disorders in a really, really specific way. And the only time you talk, like, in, if you ever take like AP psych in high school or whatever, or like a psych class in high school, right? You spend 2 seconds talking about eating disorders and you're shown this picture of an emaciated person, say, and you say, that's anorexia. And then you see a picture of a person in front of a toilet and you say, that's bulimia. And that's the end of conversation, you know? So it surprises me how much it needs to be reiterated.
Yeah.
You know?
It's just, you know, especially I think, like, I feel like I have an interesting perspective on it because I feel like in the field where I work and like the ages of people I work with, it's like high demographic of people that are prone to eating disorders.
Right.
You know, not just like in the entertainment field, but also like teaching. Like I have like even male students that, you know, I've been like a little bit worried about. And I think it's something that, you know, that people aren't on the lookout for.
Right.
Like, especially in teenage boys, because you wouldn't expect it, or like people that are adults, like grown women, who are like kind of, and I know people experience it with their moms, but just like, that's like in the home, like you really see it, but like casual references with adult people that you think would be like over that shit. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think like everything always circles back to the fact of like how normalized dieting is, because it's like that's the precipice of disordered eating behaviors. And so when we value thinness, value dieting like behaviors, when someone starts engaging in that, and then even more so to the extreme, it just usually receives praise of some kind, or like it doesn't really fully get clocked as like an eating disorder until like, you know, it's completely off the rails kind of thing. And I feel like that's obviously really sad, because it like plays into this whole like accessibility issue as well, where, you know, you have doctors who, if they're not spurring on a potential eating disorder in someone's like formative years, they're completely dismissing or disregarding how someone's relationship with food is impacting them, especially when they're only focused on somebody's weight and how that might be tying into their health or whatever. Yeah. So you have those professionals not screening, basically, for eating disorders.
I don't think I was ever, like, even questioned about that stuff, like, at the doctor's office.
Really? I
mean, yeah, not, like, I mean, to be fair, did I go to the doctor very often?
No.
But, like, when I went, they... like my memory of it is like, hey mom, is she eating vegetables?
right as like a kid, they, you know, like will ask you about what you're eating, but they don't, yeah, they're not really that...
especially if like, which funnily enough, when my funny research, like OSF,
OSFED?
OSFED and atypical anorexia are the most common eating disorders.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which means, like, maybe you don't look the way you expect someone with an eating disorder to look. Those are the most common ones. And since I never looked like there was something going on with me, I was never mm-hmm. questioned by doctors about, are you doing okay? How are you feeling? You know?
Yeah. And so it's like, when you have those professionals, you have family members who are probably engaged in their own disordered eating behaviors. And then you have friends, right, who might be engaged in their own disordered eating behaviors. Like, who's there to say, hey, maybe you should get help? Or, yeah. And then even so, even if you get to that stage of like, okay, I think you should get help, who's going to say that, you know, the treatment facility is going to accept you and validate your struggles and be willing to work with you and even treat you in a way that's conducive or helpful, you know? The anger is within me. I can be tamed, but yeah.
Oh my God,
it's very frustrating that that's like the reality of it.
I feel like something else that maybe people don't understand about it, and this is like kind of from my own personal experience and the experience that I know that, you know, other people that like close to me that have had eating disorders that weren't like caused by their ballet teacher, because I do know some people that, you know, dance was a huge push for them, but was like feeling a lack of control in your life.
Yep.
And that being something that you can control. So
yes,
it's there, like a fear of losing control. Like for me, definitely, and like I know for a fact, many people, mm-hmm. just like losing control of one thing in your life, and what else is easier to control than what goes in your mouth? You know what I mean?
Yeah, most definitely. I feel like that's like when I went to treatment, that was like the 101, right? Because like treatment's kind of funny, where it's like, they kind of give you a crash course on what it even means to have like an eating disorder, which like, that's I guess funny. Makes sense. Like that's sometimes how therapy works. Like you need to be educated about the thing that you're struggling with, a little psychoeducation, so that once you fully understand it, you can work through it, I guess, is the kind of rationale there. But yeah, I would say a part of that eating disorder psychoeducation 101 was eating disorders more often than not are about control. And they're a way for people who don't deal with change well or are perfectionistic.
I am terrible at dealing with change.
Yep. It's like, it's funny that like, oh, yeah. I didn't think I had a problem with change. I really didn't.
Like,
my eating disorder was the worst when I went to college. What bigger shit to life transition is there than going into college, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm really just that, like, even, like, if, like, people just change plans or, like, oh, we're moving to 1 hour later. I'm like, okay.
Literally, I feel the same. And this is why every time Gianna and I, this is for everyone listening, every time Gianna and I have a conversation about what we're going to record or we're going to do something, we apologize to each other, like, times. Every time we need to change the plans, because I think we both know how much we don't like plans changing.
Classic.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I think it's one of those things where it's like, it's not a rule. Like, not all eating disorders are going to be about control.
Right.
But when you start understanding that eating disorders are there as a coping mechanism, mm-hmm. in which control and using it for control is a huge factor, then it starts to like kind mm-hmm. of make a little bit more sense why it's so difficult to stop engaging in those kinds of behaviors.
Yeah. And also I think another major thing is people with eating disorders usually don't just have an eating disorder.
Yes.
Like a lot mm-hmm. of times it's based on like, or not based on, paired up with, matched with having like anxiety or depression. And I think especially with anxiety, I think a lot of with social media and stuff and like with the internet, like you can just say whatever you want. There's a lot of like misinformation about food and about what is good and what is bad for you. And a lot of people have opinions about things. And it can be so easy to like go down a rabbit hole of this is bad for me and this is bad for me and this is bad for me. And like getting so worked up about like, oh, I can't eat that anymore. I can't eat that anymore. I can't have that. I can't do that because it's going to hurt me. And like the anxiety about nutrition can also lead to eating disorders.
Yeah, like, most definitely.
Noam and I were on the train. Oh, you would be so mad. And there is an advertisement right now that's on all the trains for a supplement, for like the supplement and like the eye grabbing kind of phrase on it is food is not enough. And it is like a selling point basically of like, oh, you need to buy my supplements.
Yeah.
And like, for example, the one Noam gets so worked up about this because I told him he wanted to take like astronomy. And I was like, why
astronomy?
Like for he had two options, nutrition and astronomy.
Oh, okay.
Would you run? Like it's not useful in your life. Like you could take nutrition and like learn something like useful. So he took nutrition and now he's all about like learning about vitamins. So he's like, it's 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C is the pill. He's like, you only need 85 milligrams of vitamin C per day. That's the maximum. You're wasting your money. You're peeing it all out. Like he's like very adamantly like.
And he should
like,
say it with his whole chest.
He really, so he said it out loud on the train. And while I was there, you know, my friend who was with us, we were heading to the beach. She was like, yeah, like I feel like people with eating disorders like, would maybe think like that's enough. Like they don't need to eat food if they're taking these supplements. And it's like, that's like one of the things like misinformation that's so prevalent. And I'm sure if you dig in a rabbit hole, you can find some crazy people that are like, yeah, supplements. That's all you need. And it's like, what?
Do you know what it's making me think of? It's making me think of like Adele.
Yeah.
And how like they released like an article about like what her diet was. And she was on like 85,000 million supplements.
Yeah.
In addition to like whatever little thing that she ate. And it's just like, it frustrates me on a number of levels. One, because it's like, I think sometimes when we like talk about like diet culture as like an industry.
Yeah.
People like don't really understand what that means. Cause sometimes it feels like it's just like more of an interpersonal thing of like, oh, we just all want to be thin or whatever. Like diet culture isn't like a real entity, right? But it's all these companies that profit from it by trying to sell the supplements and shit and scare you. It's like always based in fear mongering too. And I think that's what makes me the most upset.
So like people with anxiety and stuff, like they sometimes, and like for myself, when I don't think I have like a clinical level of anxiety, but I do get very anxious and I feel like it's kind of weird to think of it that way, but I feel like people with ADHD are neurodivergent and sometimes that kind of clouds my perspective. I don't always see things straight. Mm-hmm. And when you're so anxious and so afraid, you don't often think of the logic of the situation. So someone that is anxious and afraid of harming their body with foods and things might take these ads to heart very seriously.
Right. And also, I think it's just one of those things where it's like, you can't expect people not to take things at face value. I was watching a TikTok the other day where they were this lady who's diabetic and wears like the Dexcom thing that monitors your blood sugar and it gives you insulin. She was talking about that and how she was at a golf place, a golf club, question mark. I don't know. She was golfing, I think, for some reason. I don't know why anyone would golf, but anyways, there was like this man there who like asked her about it, and he goes, oh yeah, like I use one too to check my blood sugar, and I try not to have my blood sugar be over this certain amount. And it was like through this, like, it's obviously he didn't get it because he is diabetic by any means. He got it through whatever this other source is, where they're selling it as a way to, with like a little plan that says, you know, like these are the only foods that you can eat, and these foods will help keep your blood sugar under a certain level, and going over this level is bad, quote unquote, whatever, right? So it's like, again, another one of these things of like a company just trying to make profit through fear mongering. And the information that this man was saying was just like not accurate. Hold on. I'm about to cough. Give me 1 second.
So this man was receiving inaccurate information.
Yes. Mm. Sorry for my coughing interlude. I muted myself. But yeah, the number that he was trying to keep his blood sugar under was like, if he had gone over that number, he would have still been in normal range. You know what I mean? For a healthy average person.
Yeah.
That doesn't have any kind of insulin resistance, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just like, I mean, I appreciate that this lady said, like, you know, she took the time to try to educate him, but it's like, why would he have needed to like double check that information? You know what I mean? Like, why? And also, what random person on the street knows what level of blood sugar your body is supposed to be at any given time? You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, some people are so afraid of being unwell.
Right. It's very interesting, actually. I mean, yeah. I think, like, sometimes I would like to dive into this, the psychology of that one day, because I feel like there's a variety of different things, but, like,
I mean, I think, so I really think, personally, like, after, so I had COVID in 2020, like, when it first was invented, and, like, I...
When it was first like, invented? Is that what you just...
I mean, yeah.
Invented in 2020, trademarked.
Like, but it was, like, fresh and new. Nobody knew what it was. And, like, I didn't know what I had when I'm sick. Because, like, I, you know, the doctor said I had sinus infection. And, you know, whatever. Anyways, after I had it, I didn't process it at all. And, like, it's not until, like, the past year that I've been, you know, going to school and going, you know, getting new students, taking a train every day. And I've gotten like normal sicknesses, you know?
Yeah.
Cold, cough, whatever. And like, it was like the world for me was ending. Like I thought I was gonna die every single time I got sick. Like I truly believed that. And like, even like, a few weeks ago, like, I did not drink any water the whole day, and my throat was feeling dry.
Oh.
And yeah. I was, like, crying. I was like, I'm gonna be sick, I'm gonna... And my boyfriend was like, why are you so upset? Like, if you get sick, you'll just get better. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't been exposed to anybody with COVID, so stop thinking with COVID you're gonna die. And I think it's because I really did think I was gonna die when I had COVID the first time. And so now I have, like, the trauma of it coming to break my ass. So I feel like maybe people, like, who have, like, a experience with a parent that died of, like, blood sugar or something, maybe they are so afraid of, like, being unwell in the same way that they, like, go to the extreme. And they want to be, like,
weak. Yeah. And I think that's
aging. People that are afraid of aging, like, as well.
That's true. I do think this was, like, an older man as well. So that could have been part of it. But, I mean, I think it's, like, extremely valid to... If you have a scary experience or know someone that was disabled through an illness or died through an illness or something like that, to be fearful of getting ill. Like, that's kind of like a logical train of thought, even if it's kind of an overreaction in that moment. Like, obviously, a cold shouldn't kill you. We don't live in the 1500s, but, you know. But I think that makes sense. But I also think, like, there's obviously, like, real pathological, like, disorders related to getting sick, but then there's also, like, the weird kind of, like, victim mentality of, like, something, like, being ill or having something wrong with me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's it's like, just, like, all the
I don't know. It's just, like, an interesting, like, psychological thing in general, like, the emphasis that we place on like being sick sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyways, not to get sidetracked, but I do have like another thing that I wish people who didn't have eating disorders.
Go for it.
Okay, I have like three related to body image. So okay. I'll just kind of say them all in one go. So one, not everyone with an eating disorder struggles with body image. I will expand on these in a second. Two, not everyone with an eating disorder has body dysmorphic disorder, or body dysmorphia, as we more commonly call it. And three, body image goes beyond the thin ideal. I hope you all can hear my cat. He's trapped in my room, currently speaking. Okay, let me break these down for you. Because I do think like body image and eating disorders are not even a Venn diagram in people's head. They're like the same circle. You know what I mean? So I think when it comes to not everyone with eating disorders struggles with body image, right? So one, we have eating disorders that can be diagnosed that are not related to body image whatsoever. For example, ARFID, avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. A part of having ARFID, body image like isn't with the equation. Could you still struggle with your body image and have ARFID? Yes, but like you don't need to have distorted body image, issues with your body image in order to be diagnosed with ARFID, right? And ARFID tends to go along with like neurodivergencies, having sensory issues, OCD, trauma, perhaps. So things like that, right? Yeah. So it's not necessarily the common equation that I think we try to perpetuate as a society where it's like, girl doesn't want to be fat, so therefore eating disorder. You know what I mean? So in that way, not all eating disorders deal with body image. And then furthermore, to even expand on that, even though body image comes into play with the diagnostic criteria of like anorexia, for instance, like you were saying about control earlier,
yeah,
and anxiety and depression, sometimes having those like comorbid disorders going on is kind of enough to have like an eating disorder overall, right? And still get diagnosed with one. So the central issue might not be, and this is like true of like a lot of people that I was in treatment with. Mm-hmm. Some people, their relationship with food got so bad because of their depression or because of their anxiety.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't necessarily that they were like trying to eat as little as possible in order to affect their weight. It was like a symptom of like a larger thing that was going on for them, right? And then also like similarly, if someone went through like a trauma, for instance, they might subconsciously, for instance, be looking to change their body in order to avoid re-traumatization in the future. So it might not even be something that they're like consciously aware of when it comes to their body image in that regard, but it might still be like a factor and like how they're using food as like a way to cope.
Yeah. Like for example, like if someone experienced like some kind of abuse mm-hmm. because of like a certain body type that they have,
yes,
they might use food, to change the shape of their body.
Exactly.
So that they don't resemble their past form. I'm just clarifying.
Which they're being abused. Yeah.
I had 100%. To think about that for a second when you said it. I was like, it's like, do you know that episode of Law and Order when it's like, Ice-T's like, so it's like someone that has a problem with the horses. Like, what is rape? And then like someone has explained to Ice-T what rape is. Oh, I get it.
That one. Yeah. Yes, that is exactly what I'm referring to, for instance. But I think it could qualify for, like, all.
Yeah. No, yeah. That was just, like, the first example that came into my mind.
Yes, definitely. So that's one. So then also, when I say not everyone with an eating disorder has body dysmorphic disorder, This one is like a very like nuanced thing. I think it's just like a personal gripe that I have. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's important to be aware of like the difference between like body dissatisfaction and body dysmorphia. Mm-hmm. Right. And then also then again, body dysmorphic disorder, which is like a whole nother thing that you can be diagnosed with. Right. So I would say a lot of times, or I can say from my own experience, like body dissatisfaction was really prevalent. Did mm-hmm. I have like in the depths of my eating disorder, did I have the best conception of what my body looked like in reality, in quotes? No. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, pretty common, especially people with restrictive eating disorders, to overestimate the size of their body, right? That is a pretty common feature, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have body dysmorphic disorder, because body dysmorphic disorder is really centered around the behaviors that you engage in based on the quote unquote perceived flaw that you have, right? And then also we have a whole separate episode on body dysmorphic disorder, so you all can like go check that out if you yeah. want. But body dysmorphic disorder does not just have to be about weight and size and shape. You know, it could be your nose, it could be a blemish, it could be things about your face, right? And so while your reality can get really wonky, and I hypothesize that it's hard to conceptualize what your body looks like when it's in a constant state of change. So if you're constantly yeah. losing or gaining weight, it's really hard to pinpoint down what the size of your body actually is. Because you have so many perceptions of what yourself is and what it can look like, and it's never stable. It feels like it's always changing, so it's like you can't really even trust your self-perception at that point either. So I just think it's like important to be aware of the difference between eating disorders and body dysmorphic disorder and how they can overlap and how yeah. they can also be separate and distinct things.
Do you feel like it's causal sometimes, like the body dysmorphic disorder leads to an eating disorder, or eating disorder can lead to body dysmorphic disorder?
I think it could. I think I would say, like, maybe in my direct experience, I was never technically diagnosed with body dysmorphic disorder, as far as I'm mm-hmm. aware of. But I would say that, like, my issues with my perception of my body and how I, you know, avoided mm-hmm. mirrors, tried to hide my body, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, was as a result of my eating disorder, right? And then as soon as my weight stabilized,
yeah,
I stopped having a problem, right? With overall, I feel like my self-perception feels accurate.
Yeah,
I might still not like my body, but that's just body dissatisfaction. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think I still have the reality of it to me makes sense. I don't think I'm like underestimating or overestimating my size, and I'm not engaging in those behaviors to actively try to either correct perceived flaw or avoid perceived flaw, avoid other people seeing what I think is a perceived flaw, et cetera, et cetera. But I definitely think that, you know, body dysmorphic disorder can lead to an eating disorder. And I think even yeah. there was, the frick is her name? Melanie something. There's this like Irish YouTube lady who has like a history of eating disorders. And I think body dysmorphic disorder as well. And I think she said something kind of similar, that like there was like a perceived body part that she had that she, I guess, felt was like, you know, too big, something like that. And then in effort to change it, to like, you know, get rid of that perceived flaw, is when she started engaging in like the eating disorder behaviors and things like that. So I definitely think it can, one can lead to the other, or they can just overlap in general. But I don't think they have to overlap either. Like, you're valid in your eating disorder if you don't have a misperception of what your body looks like, you know?
Yeah. I feel like even for me now though, like, and like I've never been like diagnosed by doctors with anything, because yeah. I didn't go to a doctor, but like I still like I feel like I don't really know what I look like still, because sometimes I surprise myself. I'm like, not me.
Well, like, I think
I used to be dancing so much, I would see myself so much in a mirror right. every day, and now I'm not dancing every day anymore, and I'm not looking at myself as much as I used to. And I feel like sometimes I see myself and I'm like, is that really what I look like? And then other days it will be different. And I'm like, wait,
Right. And I think there's like a couple things that go into that in general. One, it's not like our bodies are exactly the same every single second of the day, every single day. You know what I mean? So like there is going to be a flex. Your body isn't always going to 100% look the same. So I think like that can be confusing, number one. Number two, I just think there's like little things that also kind of just supplement this idea that like none of us really fully know what our body looks like. For example, clothing sizes, right? Make it make sense. Like, I think I talked about it on here, and I know I talked to Gianna about it separately. Like, I had a whole, like, mental confusion at Old Navy because the size that I was thought I needed to get based on, like, what should make sense was not the size at all that apparently I needed to get at Old Navy. And just, like, to have so much flux where, like, one day...
But like Old Navy and Gap, especially.
I know. So it's like an industry thing as well. It's just like there is no consistency.
There's no standard.
In sizing. And it's like a lot of people like to categorize themselves. In order to get like an understanding, right? So it's like categorizing yourself as your pant size, as the sizing clothes that you wear. Like that's an easy way to kind of conceptualize overall, okay, this is my size, right?
I mean, I think something else though is, okay, they don't really make juniors clothes anymore because I feel like a lot of teen girls dress like adult women, which is fine. It's fine. Yeah. Like, where would you want? But like, when we were in our early teens, and I don't remember, I like stopped buying clothes at the store at some point. Yeah. And I like thrifted a lot of my clothes. But teen girl sizing is different than adult women sizing.
Right.
And it's crazy. And like dance clothes too, because dance clothes, and I was talking to one of my classmates about it because she bought dance tights in a size that she wears in adult clothes. Mm-hmm. She bought a size small, medium dance tights.
Yeah.
And they were tiny.
Oh, yeah.
This is an adult, not children's sizes, adult dance tights that were small, medium.
Yep.
And she was like, complaining, because she's not a dancer, but everyone in my program takes dance classes and has a uniform. And she was complaining to me, like, oh, like you're so lucky, like, your tights don't cut into your stomach like this. And I was like, well, first of all, you got to snip the waistband. You can't just wear them straight out of the box. Like,
You're right.
You know, you can't just, you have to snip the waistband to like give you a little extra inch there. Mm-hmm. But also I wear a size large, extra large dance tights because I'm not a child.
Yeah.
And so junior's pants, I remember being like, I'm this number size in pants. Shame on me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In adult pants, I wear a smaller size than that.
Right.
And I am not smaller than I was when I was 13. Yeah. It's silly. And like the number thing throws everyone off. So I was like, let's just do what men's pants do and just do the numbers.
I wish. Yeah. I know. No, the same thing, even just buying regular tights. It's the same thing. It's like, I don't even. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't buy tights. I hate them. I only buy.
I feel like I need them on occasion.
Yeah.
So I have them just in case I decide to put them on. But yeah, I always have to, I think one time I tried to buy what I thought would be my size. It was like very true to size and it was so tight. I was like, okay, I've learned my lesson. Yeah. I don't know why they're so small, but I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, especially the dance industry, I think it's also like we can shit on them because sometimes people in the dance industry deserve it. But the majority of dancers who are buying these things are teenagers.
Yeah.
You know. So it's like, gotta just keep that in mind when you buy like dance wear, like leotards and stuff, especially if you have like a butt, like little teen girl butt don't have butts. Mm-hmm. You have to get a larger size so you can fit your freaking thighs in the little leg holes.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah, I know.
I think that's a good point.
So I think like, those things in general are like everyday things that we have to deal with that do not help anyone conceptualize accurately what they look like. So yeah, I think it's something that like everyone's going to struggle, I think, in their life. I don't think anyone fully accurately perceives what they look like, especially because like, you know, like looking at a photo of yourself versus looking at the reflection of yourself versus looking down at yourself, that provides three different sensory experiences. You know what I mean? Like, those are all like completely different things despite being the same body in each kind of thing. So I think it's something that everyone kind of struggles with in general, but that doesn't mean very much like anxiety. Just because I can experience the emotion of anxiety doesn't give me a disorder around it. So anyways, the last thing, body image goes beyond the thin ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So while I would like to reinforce that, as I feel like has been evident through our conversation, especially when it comes to restrictive eaties, but I also think just in general, like the thin ideal really permeates eating disorders. I think it's like that's the societal factor, right, that plays into all this stuff that's going on that like lends to people having an eating disorder. So don't get me wrong, like the thin ideal definitely plays a major role. I'm not trying to erase that. But body image itself becomes so much more conflated than simply being dissatisfied because of your perceived size or what the number says on the scale or whatever. And to like exemplify that, I remember there was one time in college when I was definitely very much struggling, and I was like walking to and from classes, and I had realized like I forgot my pen in like a class, like I had left it there, right? And for some reason, this made me like irrationally angry at myself. Like I did like the absolute like worst thing
possible.
I do
that,
I was
too.
Like very frustrated and annoyed with myself that I had left this pen there. And the immediate feeling right after recognizing that I was like angry and upset about this situation was I hate my body. It was like immediate feelings of negative body image. And so like that just goes to show like not for every eating disorder, obviously, because we reference point A, not body image does not have to do with all eating disorders. But when it is prominent, the body image gets so conflated with your feelings towards yourself, and things like that, that it's like things that you wouldn't expect to influence your body image can influence your body image, and your body image vice versa, like, and totally clouds your day in terms of your mood and how you're going about life, basically. So I think like it's important to recognize when someone like says they're struggling with body image that it has a lot more to do with how you feel about yourself than having anything to do with like necessarily
wanting to be
thinner, right? Yeah, because it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of like the right way to put it. Oh, it's kind of like, we all agree that you shouldn't call yourself fat in front of other people, especially when you're in a thin body, right? But it's the sentiment of like, well, what does calling yourself fat really mean?
Yeah.
Right? It's like, not that
okay,
you would, it's not like you're using that term as a neutral descriptor, right? To accurately talk about your body size. Instead, it's a very loaded term of how you feel about yourself, right? It means I'm lazy. It means, you know, I'm a piece of shit, whatever, right? All this like, all these like negative things that we've attached to that word. And so it's kind of like the same with body image. So like when that's the feeling that you're having those negative feelings about your body, it's all these hateful thoughts that you're thinking about yourself as well that extend outside of what your body physically looks like.
Right.
So.
No, I think also, it's kind of like it's not just about having an eating disorder, and like negative body image isn't just about wanting to be smaller or wanting to change the shape of your body. I think sometimes it's also like it's a self-punishment because of the feelings you have about yourself. It's like kind of, I'm trying to like paraphrase what you're saying. Like, it's like you're using these behaviors as punishment, not as the means to an end. So that just like, I don't know, that's, it could be a different way to phrase what you're trying to say there, which I totally agree. And like, obviously, guys, there's like so much information out there, credible information that like, you know, we're basing this episode on, like, we're not pulling everything out of our like assholes right now. Like it's real stuff out there.
It came from my psychotherapy on eating disorders 101 from the professional's mouth into my ears.
But yeah, so that's kind of, I can't think of anything else I would want people to know, except, you know, as someone who's like been struggling and also who has been like in the house, like very close with many people who have struggled with monsters, it's like, it's not fun for anybody. No one is enjoying it.
Right.
And it's not like, maybe in the moment, the person that is suffering does not make, maybe seem like they want to change or they're willing to accept your help. Mm-hmm. But it's not like, it's not about you in at that time. And like a lot of, I think a lot of life is about me. And what I learned in my acting, training, and also like my life is, it's not about you. It's about the other person. Like you really have to have grace with people. And like, that sounds so like Jesus-y, but like you have to have grace with people and like be merciful to people that are really suffering. And like, this isn't fun. It's not fun for anybody. It's very scary and sad.
Right.
And just like be kind and be there. Be a friend. Be a brother, sister, a mom. Because, you know, it might be hurtful for you. And like, that's, you know, you can go to therapy and deal with how that makes you feel. Right. You have to process how you're feeling to be treated, maybe mistreated by someone who's really suffering. And they maybe don't have the mental capacity to be kind to you. But just being there for someone could really like save their life. I don't know. That's all I got to say.
Definitely. And I think that kind of wraps into like the last three points that I wrote down, because I do think like what you were saying, there is this weird, like one, eating disorders impact everybody like involved. It obviously deeply impacts the person who's experiencing it, but you know, that also impacts the people that they're around. And I think there's like this weird stereotype that like, when it comes to like the glamorization and romanticization, if I said that right, of eating disorders, is that it's like, oh, you have the perfect life, right? Like everything's perfect. You're so sociable. You're so outgoing. Your grades are great. Yeah. You're involved in all these activities. Mm-hmm. Everything's going well. You're so well liked. But here's like, you know, like the dirty little secret that you have, right?
Yeah.
Like that's like the media perception almost. And I think what people forget, or I'd like to remind people, is that one, eating disorders are incredibly isolating, despite like what it might appear on the outside, right? And then two, shame is such a prominent component of eating disorders, I feel, both like when you're struggling with it and then in the recovery process, right? There's shame around in recovery, there's shame around engaging in behaviors versus not engaging in behaviors. There's shame when you're struggling with like how much you're eating, or like if other people are going to notice what you're doing or what you're not doing. And like, it's, there's a duality too, right? Sometimes it can be accompanied with like feelings of pride or almost a kind of like a vindictiveness in a way. Do you know what I mean?
Did you say convened? Did you say convened?
No. I said accompanied.
Oh, I was like convened.
I think I was trying to say combined, but then I switched courses really quick to accompanied. No, there like can be like the like pridefulness with that, right? Like I can do this thing that nobody else can't. My body's built different. I can survive with little, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't make any sense, right? But there's like, you know, sometimes there can be a weird satisfaction with it. But also at the same time, like the fact that I cried over my indecisiveness around whether or not to get sushi. Like, that doesn't feel good. You know what I mean? Like, there's shame involved in that. And I think, like, for a lot of people, shame is one of those core feelings that spurs on an eating disorder for a lot of people, whether that's due to trauma, whether that's just, like, how you feel about yourself or been made to feel about yourself. Like, shame is, like, a pretty, like, one of those core things that you typically have to work on in therapy, right? So, yeah, I just feel like this whole idea that, like, it's this perfect person that has an eating disorder and they feel like they're on their highest horse because they have an eating disorder. You know what I mean? Like, while that might be true in one facet, it's not, like, in my opinion, like, the core reality. Because the core reality is someone that's, like, deeply struggling, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of that just kind of coming to a head, I did, like, ask on our Instagram at Zero from the Box if you want to follow what other people, like, wish you know, others knew about eating disorders. And the most common response was, like, eating disorders are not a choice, which within the recovery community, again, I think it's one of those things that, like, everybody knows. Yeah. No one chose to have a literal mental illness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the reality is, like, I guess kind of circles back to my initial point of why we even started talking about this is, like, I guess, like, a lot of people think that it's just, like, some misguided path that you walk down, and you chose to walk down that path. You know what I mean?
But you know what? You didn't choose to walk down that path, but I think you can choose to want to make your life better.
Yes. And this is the hard, like, paradox for a lot of people to grasp is you don't choose to have an eating disorder, but you can choose recovery. And that, yeah, for and some people feels, yes, I agree. You should choose recovery. Yeah. I think also too, when you were talking about, like, people watching someone struggle with, like, an eating disorder and, like, how it's, you know, great if you can extend them grace and be there for them. I think people get really freaking frustrated.
Yeah, it is frustrating. It's extremely
because I don't think they fully understand the way in which eating disorders are an addictive behavior. And I think maybe sometimes we slightly not it's addiction is really heavily stigmatized, don't get me wrong, but I think we maybe have a little bit of a better idea of, like, what addiction recovery looks like. Like, we almost, like, expect people to fuck up in addiction recovery, right? But in eating disorder recovery, it's like, why are you not better yet? Shame on you for not being better. Why can't you just eat normally? You know, like, there's a lot of heavy judgment, a lot of frustration.
And I think if, like, people also something that like people don't realize, like, even when you're the person with the eating disorder, especially if you're younger and you're, like, with your family, is that, like, it's not just your life that changes if you have an eating disorder.
Mm.
Like, the life of your whole family is altered.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, like, you know, it can be hard to sympathize with a person that you feel is ruining your life and their own life.
Yeah.
Whether that's true or not, it's, like, not the point of what I'm saying is, like, you're allowed to be frustrated and you're allowed to be upset with someone, but you can't change the way you treat them because of, you know.
Right. I agree. Because I feel like the frustration is very common, but also the amount of times that I've heard, seen, and experienced myself, people in your life gearing that frustration at you or what it feels like at you, to me, is very, like, unacceptable.
Yeah, it's unacceptable.
Because it doesn't help the situation in any way, shape, or form. Regardless, you know, obviously that frustration is still valid. Everyone is allowed to have their emotional... Yes, exactly. Precisely. That's why. Everyone's allowed to have their emotional experience as it relates to the, you know, to the situation. And it can bring up, like, a lot of variety of emotions. I just think that there's... I think it all falls back on this idea, like, is the eating disorder a choice or not? Which obviously it's not. But I think when we kind of fall under the misconception of, like, Well, they're just choosing.
Yeah.
To continue struggling. You're placing a lot of blame on them. Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. Be kind, guys. Yeah. Really learn about things before you pass judgment on them. And yeah. Yes, spread the word.
Yeah. So if you would like to share this episode with a friend, a family member, whoever you think needs to hear it, definitely do so. This might be, you know, redundant things to people within the recovery community at this point, but hopefully it also resonates regardless.
Yeah. And yeah, so you can follow us on Instagram at serialfromthebox and email us at serialfromthebox@gmail.com. And if you want to chat with me and see my dancing, you could go to Gianna Bartolini on Instagram. And yeah. Great.
Awesome. I don't have anything I want to plug. So I'm too cool for that.
She's a great photographer there, so if you are able to weasel your way into Marie's social media, you'll get to see some really cool stuff. But yeah, so stay safe, everybody. XOXO. Bye.
Bye.